stiff arm. Gore cuts it inside. Frank Gore is still going. Touchdown, San Francisco.
Two from the 40. Couple of tight ends. Receiver right and Adrian. Hand off Adrian. Scoots loose up the middle. Across the 30. To the 20. Inside the 10. Touchdown.
First down and 10. Johnson gets a shoulder square. Watch out. He's got getting away from the top speed. Touchdown.
Welcome in to Grinding the Edge, episode number 49 here on South Harmon. I'm your host, Koopa, and you can find me on X at Dynasty Koopa and everywhere else at Koopa Troop 8. If you have not checked out the Warp Tool on the South Harmon website, go to southharmonff.com and check it out. This entire episode is going to be all about Warp and specifically how Warp is calculated. In the past, we've talked a lot about Warp, how we use it. It's kind of ingrained in a lot of the South Harmon content that you will hear on South Harmon. However, I've never really gone through and put a specific place exactly how the calculation is done and answered a lot of the questions that I have seen asked about, hey, what does the replacement player actually mean? And how do I go through and calculate the different parameters and things like that? My goal is not to flood you with a bunch of mathematical information here. My goal is to make it something that you can understand, so that way you understand what goes into the calculation, why it works the way it does, and then hopefully be able to use that to understand the limitations of Warp and the kinds of things that you need to take with a grain of salt. There's a reason there's some portions of my Warp Tool that I have under the experimental section, or I have a note that says take this with a grain of salt, or things like that. And the reason is because I understand where these mathematical calculations are coming from. And what I want to do is to have a place for you to understand this knowledge, so that way you are able to use it to the most effectiveness. So with that, first I want to get into what is Warp. Just as a brief overview, if you are coming to this episode sometime in the future because you've never heard of Warp and somebody has pointed you here, Warp stands for Wins Over Replacement Player. The point of it is to provide a calculation where you can compare one player to another player from a fantasy perspective and determine how impactful they are to your team. Now, I call it Warp because that's what I have named my tool with my calculation. There are other tools out there. Some of them are called War, some of them are called Vorp, some of them probably have other names that I don't even know about. All of these tools are trying to do the same thing. They're talking about above replacement, or over the replacement player. And it's some kind of wins or values or something like that. And the whole idea is just to say, okay, cross-positionally, which player is the most impactful? Which one is the most important? Which one is the one that you want to have on your team? If I'm sitting here and I'm trying to decide between the first quarterback and the first running back, which one is going to win me more games? If I'm trying to decide between the 20th running back and the 20th wide receiver, which one is going to win me more games? Those will change depending on scoring settings, the number of each position that needs to be started in your lineup, roster restrictions, all those sorts of things. If you are familiar with baseball, baseball uses WAR a lot. And their WAR calculations, there are multiple different kinds of WAR calculations there too. There's BWAR and FWAR, for standing for batting WAR and fielding WAR. There's WAR calculations done by ESPN versus Baseball Reference versus other sites that they all have different calculations where they combine together the statistics from the various baseball players to be able to compare them to one another. I'm doing the same thing here in fantasy. The difference is, in baseball, somebody has to come up with this, how important is a hit versus a home run, versus a strikeout, versus a walk. All those sorts of things have drastically different outcomes depending on how you determine where they are, their point in the game, things like that. And in fantasy football, everything is normalized between all the positions. We use fantasy points. A quarterback's, if they get one fantasy point, that fantasy point is the same as one fantasy point coming from a running back. Those two positions accumulate the same statistic. How they accumulate that statistic is different, but that is not what Warp is worrying about. It doesn't care whether my quarterback threw for three touchdowns and that's how he accumulated 18 points, or whether he threw for 360 yards and that's how he accumulated 18 points. Those two things are the same to Warp, because we're already normalized to fantasy points. So that's the first thing to understand. Warp does not care about any statistic that any player produces except for your fantasy points. It's not looking at anything else. It's not looking at receptions. It's not looking at target share percentage. It's not looking at interceptions and passing touchdowns and rushing touchdowns. All of those things don't matter. The only thing that matters is the number of fantasy points scored. So that's the first limitation. Do not use Warp as something that says this player is going to do well in the future. They're going to do well in the future because they're scoring lots of fantasy points, because their offense is doing well, they're a big part of their offense. All the other statistics that we look at from a normal football lens of, you know what, this guy's getting a lot of snap share, he's getting targeted a lot by the quarterback, that's why he's going to continue to do well. But if you were to look at Warp, Warp might say, hey, this guy scored 18 points after week one. Well, if those 18 points came off of, say, two long passes that went for touchdowns, all of a sudden, you might be able to look at that and say, that's not repeatable. And instead, the guy that scored 9 points, but he scored those 9 points because he was on the field 100% of the time, he was going up against Sauce Gardner, who's a shutdown corner, and he still managed to get five catches for 40 yards, and that's how he accumulated 9 points, he's more likely to do better next week. That is the kind of analysis that you can do that says that player is going to do better. Warp is not going to tell you that. Warp does not predict the future in those sorts of ways. Instead, what Warp is able to tell you is that if you are trying to decide in your flex spot, I need to decide between running back 36 and wide receiver 42. I have both those guys on my roster. That's what their projections are for the week. Which one should I be starting? Warp can tell you running back 36 is better than wide receiver 42 in this league with these scoring settings, and so you should be starting that person in your flex spot. And then in a different league, it might be telling you wide receiver 42 is better than running back 36. That's who you should be starting. So those are the sorts of things that Warp is good for, and you need to understand that limitation. Do not use Warp to predict what player is going to do better. Use your own analysis to say, I know that this player is the fourth best quarterback, and so that is where I'm going to predict them to be. And I know this other player is going to, he's wide receiver six, and those are the comparisons that I'm now doing. I'm determining whether I want wide receiver six or quarterback four on my team when I have a trade offered to me. Which one of them do I want? And so that's the kind of things that you can use Warp for. So, knowing all this, I now want to get into the calculation process of Warp. The calculation of Warp, the first step is literally just to get all the scoring for every single player for every single week. The way I do my Warp calculation is I calculate the individual Warp in terms of the replacement player versus the number of points scored week by week. The reason I do this is because it helps capture those spike weeks more accurately in my mind. You could do this across an entire season. However, I do not feel like that across season calculation accounts for those players who spike up for, say, 30 points and then have those 6-point dud weeks. Those 30-point weeks can often win you a week, whereas those 6-point weeks, sure, people might say those lose you a week, but they might not be as detrimental as those 30 points are good for winning. And it's not as well accurately calculated if, say, you get one 30-point for every 2 6-point dud weeks. Now all of a sudden, you're looking at an average points per game of 14, but the actual value to your team is every 3 weeks you're winning, just off this one player. And that is something that is insanely valuable to your team and is something that I want to be captured in my calculations. So, with that, I calculate week by week. So from this point on, everything that I'm going to be doing, assume that I am doing this on a week by week calculation. That way I don't need to keep repeating myself every single step. So, now that I have the scoring for every single player, I need to rank every single player by their position. Pretty simple. The guy that scores the most wide receiver points, wide receiver 1. The guy that scores the second most, wide receiver 2. Wide receiver 3, 4, etc. Do that at every single position. Then, I need to find the replacement player for each position. This is where a lot of people tend to have their questions. What is the replacement player? The replacement player is the best player who did not make your lineup for that week. What that means is, let's go to the simplest league possible. The only position that you start is quarterback, and you only start one quarterback. The replacement player is going to be quarterback 13, assuming a 12-team league. I forgot to say that. So the reason it's quarterback 13 is because every single team is starting one quarterback, and there are 12 teams. So there will be 12 quarterbacks started across the league. The 13th quarterback is now the replacement player because they are the player who is the best that is not started by any team. It does not matter who owns quarterback 13. It does not matter whether quarterback 13 is on the same team as quarterback 12 or quarterback 3 or whoever. Quarterback 13 serves as the replacement player for the warp calculation. Warp will assume that the quarterbacks are always evenly distributed among all of the teams. And the same goes for every other position. So if we expand this out to where you are starting one of every single position on all 12 teams, the replacement players become quarterback 13, running back 13, wide receiver 13, and tight end 13. Pretty simple. When we get to, oh, now I need to start 2 running backs. Well, the replacement player for running back becomes running back 25. And the replacement player for wide receiver, if you're starting 3 wide receivers, becomes wide receiver 37. Simple calculations that, when you just are starting static positions, make a lot of sense. Where a lot of people tend to have questions is, what about flexes? And what about super flex positions? How do those work? The way I handle this in my calculations is I then find the top players who would fill those flex positions after all the specific positions are filled. So the way I look at this is, let's take for example that 1 quarterback, 2 running back, 3 wide receiver, 1 tight end league. So I'm going to fill out all of those. So after filling out quarterback, running back, the 3 wide receivers, and the tight end, I will be sitting there with quarterback 13, running back 25, wide receiver 37, tight end 13. Then I have 2 flex spots. Those 2 flex spots can be filled by running backs, wide receivers, and tight ends. And I'm going to take the highest scoring players across any of the running backs, wide receivers, and tight ends. That might turn out to be 8 running backs, 10 wide receivers, and 6 tight ends. Let's say it's a high tight end premium, and that's why there's 6 tight ends in there. So when I put in those players, I've now bumped up to, okay, my running back replacement is running back 33. My wide receiver replacement is wide receiver 47. And my tight end replacement is tight end 18. I have lowered those replacement players based on how many of those guys should fill in the flex spots. Now I go to the super flex spot, because the super flex does running back, wide receiver, tight end, and quarterback. And that is less restrictive than the normal flex spots, because now I can also do quarterbacks. What happens here in most standard leagues is I say I want the 12 best players who are out of those four positions, and usually those 12 best players are quarterbacks. And so it just ends up being that I just add 12 to the quarterback number, and my replacement player of quarterback 13 becomes quarterback 25. There are some leagues where quarterback scoring is low. There's few enough flex spots, few enough wide receiver spots, things like that, that sometimes that quarterback number will become 22 or 23. But it's only when you have absolutely insane scoring that you are not filling all of the spots or nearly all the spots with quarterbacks in that super flex spot. So that's just a trap to call out for. I sometimes hear people talk about in podcasts and things like that of like, oh, I can start a wide receiver in my super flex spot. Like, oh, I've got that. I heard somebody a couple weeks ago talk about like, I'm fine with my super flex spot. I've got Brian Thomas for that. And then they were talking about their flex spots, and they were talking about like having Jerry Jeudy in their flex. That makes no sense. The super flex spot is the spot that you fill last in your lineup. And Brian Thomas should be, at the very least, in your flex spot over Jerry Jeudy, if not like in your wide receiver spot over somebody else. And that super flex spot is either your absolute worst, like the replacement player of running back, wide receiver, tight end, or a quarterback on your team. And so that's why it should almost always be a quarterback. You should never fall into this trap of, I'm trying to fill super flex with some other position, because unless you have a glut of the absolute top of any of some kind of position, it should be a quarterback in your super flex. We all know this on a subconscious level, but sometimes people try to justify it, and it just bothers me in the wrong way. I had to insert that in here as I'm talking about this. So going back to calculating warp. So we have found the replacement player at every single position. We figured out it's that 25, 33, 47, and I think I came out to 18 or 19 or something like that. The exact numbers don't matter. The important thing is this can change depending on your league. I just talked through a league that was start one quarterback, two running back, three wide receiver, one tight end, two flex, and a super flex. But if you have additional flexes, I'm in some leagues. I have one league where I'm sure it would be really fun to go through this calculation on it, where it's start one running back, one wide receiver, one tight end, like nine flexes and a super flex. Like, it's a really fun league to play in, but in terms of calculating warp, it ends up being, okay, you're pulling all of these players from the flex spots. And so then you end up fill this out in a really weird way when to get that final calculation. But just know, no matter what league that you put in, that's how I'm calculating the replacement player. Now that we have the replacement player, we look at how many points they scored that week. So going back to our quarterback example, let's say our quarterback 25 replacement, let's say they scored 11 points that week. So I now need to calculate how many more points did every quarterback or fewer points score than the replacement player. So if my quarterback scored 22 points, they scored 11 more points than the replacement quarterback. And if my quarterback scored 8 points, they scored negative 3 points when compared to the replacement player. And so I go through, you calculate that difference every single time. Notice we're just concerned about the difference in points. And this is how you start to see the normalization between positions. The 25th best quarterback might have scored 11 points, but that 33rd best running back might have scored only 7. So now all of a sudden, that running back, they don't need to score the 22 that your quarterback scored. They are able to score 4 fewer. They only have to score 18 in order to have that same difference. And that's how we start this process of normalizing between the positions. That number, that difference between the replacement player and how many points your player scored, that is the core calculation behind warp. That is the thing that allows us to compare across positions and know that we are looking at the value of that position relative to whoever else you would need to start, and not comparing them solely by points per game to each other. Now that we have this, we could just do it, hey, fantasy points over the replacement player. But that doesn't really give us a great value of, is the difference between somebody scoring 12 points 12 weeks in a row versus that person that scores, say, 25 points in 1 week and then scores 11 points every other week? Like, you'd want the guy that scores 11 points every single week, except for 1 week they score 25, because you're likely to win that 25-point week. Whereas all those 12-point weeks, like, you aren't likely to win those. And so that's where the wins portion comes in. The reason I call it wins over replacement player and not points scored over replacement player is to have this value. And the way I calculate this value goes back to probably something you're familiar with, which is the standard bell curve. The standard bell curve, it allows you to have odds of, hey, I have a random distribution, and what is the percentage chance that I have beaten or lost to the random distribution? Sometimes we know that we go against a really, really tough team that week. Sometimes we go against a really, really easy one, and it didn't matter who was in our team and how many points they scored, because we're still going to win. And so that's the whole point of the random distribution. So, to determine what our random distribution is going to be, and how many points you need to actually cause an increase in your odds of winning in that random distribution, the first thing that I have to do is to calculate the average number of points that each team is going to score. So I just take the wide receivers 1 through 12 and the wide receivers 13 through 24. Now, if you're in a 10-team league, this might look like wide receivers 1 through 10 and wide receivers 11 through 20. Note this changes by team size, changes for each roster size, etc. I average the number of points scored by all of them, and then I add all those together. So I take the average of quarterback 1, wide receiver 1, wide receiver 2, wide receiver 3, running back 1, running back 2, tight end 1, flex 1, flex 2, and super flex for this example league that I'm talking through. And I add all those together. And I get spat out some number like, on average, a team is going to scores 113 points this week. Cool. So now I have this average number. But I still need to have a distribution. And this distribution comes from this thing called a standard deviation. I'm not going to go into exactly how a standard deviation is calculated. This is a math and statistics thing that I do not want to force you. If you don't want to learn about it, you can go look that up. But at a base level, I calculate the standard distribution of each position and combine them all together to get the standard distribution for that all the scoring settings around that average. So I have 113 is the center point for the standard distribution, and it gives me a range, and it says, hey, 50% of the teams, they're going to score between 107 and 119 points. And as you go further away, you get further and further standard distributions away from that. each standard distribution that you go away, there's fewer and fewer teams in that. And so it makes it such that very few teams are going to score 130 points that week. And very few teams are also going to score only 85 points that week. But there's going to be the same number at either end. And so you might just get lucky, no matter who you start, that, okay, that 17-point difference between 113 and 130, you've jumped that hurdle and you've beaten most of the teams. And a 17-point performance in the other direction, where you were 17 points under the replacement player, is all of a sudden going to cause you to lose to the same number of teams that you would have beaten. That's the whole idea behind it. Now that I have this standard distribution, I know that a bog standard average league is going to score 113 points. They're going to win 50% of the time. The standard distribution, now I can go, okay, the replacement player is going to score this many points fewer than average. So we need an average score for each position as well. So we have an average for the quarterbacks, all 24 of the starting ones, all 33 of the running backs, all 47 of the wide receivers, and all 18 of the tight ends. You get that average score, and that is your bog standard average team. So now let's replace that with the replacement player. So the average, let's say wide receiver, scored 16 points that week. That's a lot, but sure, we'll just go with it. And the replacement wide receiver scored 8. That difference is 8 points. So let's go to our standard distribution and let's crawl back 8 points. Our standard distribution was at 113. So now we're going to look at 105. How many teams do we beat? What I find in my calculations from doing this over and over again is that tends to be the replacement player is somewhere around still beating like 40% of teams. So on average, usually that's like a 0.4-ish number. I've seen it as low as like 0.3 sometimes, but usually it's somewhere in that 0.3 or 0.4 range. And so I'm going to get a value that is 0.3 or 0.4 for that replacement player. That means that if you had the replacement player, you're still going to end up winning like 30 to 40% of the time. Like, it's not actually that detrimental, which is kind of where some of the backup strategies start to come in. Like, this kind of reinforces the whole idea of if you play backup quarterbacks, backup running backs, backup wide receivers, backup tight ends, like, if you're just getting replacement value, you aren't making it so you go from a 0% chance of winning and you're having to fight back. You're only coming back to a 30 or 40% chance of winning, and then you're fighting from there. That's how that strategy can work. So all these things kind of run together. All these strategies that I've talked about in this podcast, there's a reason all of this comes together and you're able to utilize these. It all comes back down to the math of fantasy football. But going back to our warp calculation, we have this number for, okay, you still win, let's call it 40% of your matchups with the replacement wide receiver. Now we go to a wide receiver, let's say the Jamar Chase, who went off and he scored 35 points that week. He scored 35 points compared to the replacement player. He scored 28 more points than them. Compared to the average player, because he's scored 30 points that week, 30 minus our average player, I determined it was 16 in this hypothetical, so okay, 16 it is, he scores 14 more points. And those 14 more points, plug that into the standard deviation. So we take that 113 number, add 14 to it, you get 127. That 127, we calculate out, that beats, let's call it 75% of teams. So there's 25% of teams that still score higher than that, but we will beat 75% of teams off of that bonus 14 points over average that Ja'Marr Chase gave us. Now, it becomes pretty simple. If you think about it, we have a 40% chance of winning with the replacement player. We have a 75% chance of winning with Ja'Marr Chase on his amazing 30-point performance that week. So just subtract the replacement player from Ja'Marr Chase's number. So you take 75%, subtract 40%, and you end up with 35%. If you remember when you were in elementary school, what was a percentage? It was a .xx number. If you had 30%, it was 0.3. So in our case, 35%, 0.35. And that is the basis of the number that appears in a warp calculation. That is how I come up with these numbers that I can say, okay, for this week, Ja'Marr Chase scored 0.35 warp. It's because he gives you a 35% bonus that week of winning your matchup compared to putting in a replacement player. If I go through and I perform this calculation for all 17 weeks of the season, I have a 0.35 for week 1, and then I get a 0.1 for week 2, and a 0.2 for week 3, and I go on and on and on. I add them all together, and I come up with 2.9. That is the end result across the entire season, and that is Ja'Marr Chase's warp over the course of the season. He accumulated that much percentage chance that you won over starting the replacement player. So that is your wins in terms of percentage chance instead of starting a replacement player. It is that complicatedly simple. It sounds complicated when you're going through it, but in the grand scheme of things, it's actually not terribly complicated. It's something that if you sit down, if you need to listen to this podcast a couple times, feel free to scrub through, re-listen to things. Just go through and take some time. Remember back to your simple math that was in elementary school and middle school. Think back to that statistics class that you were forced to take in high school that you probably crammed for the test and then promptly tried to forget everything. Like those sorts of things are the core underpinnings of what warp is. It's not any mind-breaking calculus. It's not anything that is something that you couldn't teach to a high schooler. You could teach a high schooler how to calculate warp, and they would be able to understand it. The other question that I want to answer is, how do I do AWARP? AWARP is my term. I call it adjusted warp. And what it is adjusted for is for start sit rates of various players. The way I do that is I collect a crap ton of data about all of the fantasy leagues that people like you and I play in. I have a database that I personally keep that has literal millions of users and millions of fantasy football leagues in it. And what I do with that is I determine what are the most started players on any given week. That way I know the decisions that managers like you and I are making. And I use those players to determine who qualifies as eligible players for the warp calculation. So what I do is I take your league and I look at my first warp calculation where I did not restrict by the players at all. And I see, hey, we've got 47 wide receivers that are supposed to be started this week. Now, we all know the wide receiver position is going to have some people that come out of nowhere. Nobody was starting Nick Westbrook-Ikhine when he went out there and he caught 3 passes for like 50 yards and 2 touchdowns. But we all know he scored so many points he came out to like wide receiver 10 that week. That Nick Westbrook-Ikhine is not going to count as an eligible wide receiver to be in the top 47 for that week because he was not started anywhere close to the top 47. And so I'm going to exclude him from the data, and that will lower what the replacement player's warp is. The way I determine how many players to include, if you look at my warp tool, you will notice I have an efficiency slider. That efficiency slider has four options. They are perfect, high, medium, and low. The perfect selection means that I only want to include the best 47 wide receivers in terms of start rate. I don't want to include anyone else. I do not recommend using this setting because if you have literally one wide receiver in that top 47, who they go out and they pull a hamstring and they end up with an absolute dud of a zero, now all of a sudden your replacement player has scored you 0 points. I do not think that is very useful. I do not think that that is something that you want to have in this calculation because it can throw off the numbers. Some weeks you end up with that, some weeks you don't, and it makes the weeks where you have one player that scores a zero be worth way more, because now all of a sudden the replacement player is scoring way below the average. It's skewing that lower end of what I was talking about. You remember that 0.4 where that 40% win rate? Well, when you get a zero, it might go down to that 0.3 or even like a 0.25. And all of a sudden, that is going to make the win percentage for that week in the calculation skyrocket. Make that week worth more for no reason whatsoever than one person got injured. So the way around that is what I call my high setting. My high setting is the recommended one from me, and it is the default setting for a reason. The high setting is 1.2 times. So 1.2 times 47, I end up including 57 wide receivers in the data set because I round up. And what that gives me is I now have an additional 10 wide receivers that are the most started, that maybe you went ahead and started in your leagues, because just because they were the most started 47 wide receivers, people use different ranks. But we tend not to stray that far from actual rankings. Like, if a wide receiver was ranked wide receiver like 63, and you only need to start 47 wide receivers that week, that's so far out of whack that usually those guys just end up not getting started at all. Or if you are doing that, it's kind of out of a desperation play. You're a big outlier. So I choose to exclude those in my data set. So I'm including in those 10 additional wide receivers. And I take those 57 wide receivers, and those are now the 57 wide receivers that are solely eligible for the warp calculation. So I go through the same process that I just spent half an hour talking through. And I do all those calculations again, but instead of including all 160 wide receivers in the NFL and choosing the top 47, I'm only choosing the top 47 out of these 57 wide receivers. That's how I come up with the warp calculation in AWARP. And you will notice that it lowers the replacement player value. And so it makes it so that those players that do perform that week give you a little bit more value. Those players that don't perform at all, they don't hurt you as much. They don't go as far negative compared to if you are including all of the players. That calculation is the true warp calculation. If you notice on the experimental section of my warp tool, I still give you those numbers for when I'm including all 160 wide receivers, but there's a reason I recommend AWARP. And the reason is because I want to accurately show you based on who you are starting that week and who you are expecting to start. I don't want to give you the random chaff, the random fluff of all these players that you never would have put in your lineup anyway. The medium setting is 1.5 times. So instead of 1.2, where it goes up to 57, I'm going 1.5 times, which adds on another 24 wide receivers instead of just another 10. And so I end up including the top 71 wide receivers. The reason I do that is maybe you're trying to pull off a crazy strategy. Maybe you're trying to do the backup wide receiver strategy. Well, if you're trying to see the validity of that, I would recommend turning your efficiency to medium, because that is now going to include all those wide receivers who were initially outside of that range. And then finally, I have low. Low is double the amount of that position. And the reason for that one is just to include just such a large corpus that you are likely making all of your start-sit decisions inside of that window. It's not infinite. That's what True Warp is. That's over in the experimental tab. Low is just to include basically everyone except for the ones that really came out of nowhere. Your Tylan Wallace, when he had that one game that like he caught four passes and one of them was a like 86-yard touchdown, like he's still not going to show up in that data set. And so that's the point of that one. So now I've gone through, I've talked about how warp is calculated, how AWARP is calculated, and I still need to talk about one nuance that I haven't covered, which is best ball. How do I figure out what players should be included in AWARP in a best ball league? That makes no sense. And also, if you look at my warp calculation for best ball, nobody ever has a negative score. So let me cover the lack of negative scores first. My philosophy with best ball is if you have a player that is playing below replacement, they aren't making your lineup. They are literally automatically getting subbed out for a player who is in the top corpus and is better than replacement. So you can never have a bad start-sit decision. So I just, in best ball, anytime somebody would score negative warp, they get 0 points for it. Simple as that. Now, the other thing, if you are being keen and you're thinking about, okay, how is this calculation that Coop has been talking about working? I was talking about how that corpus, I do 1.2 times the wide receivers. And in this hypothetical league I've been talking about, I am taking the top 57 wide receivers, and that is my data set. However, in a best ball league, you have all of your bench spots. All of your bench spots would say that I have a lot more wide receivers rostered. If I have, say, 20 bench spots, I probably have like 8 or 9 wide receivers on all of the teams in the league and it just sitting there on the bench in addition to the 47 that are started. So if you take 8 by 12, you get another 96. We'll just round that to 100. You probably have 157 wide receivers rostered in this league. I want to include those 157 rosters as part of the corpus for the available wide receivers that are going to be started in this league. So, to make sure that AWARP for best ball captures this, I calculate the true warp. This is the not adjusted warp, the initial calculation without any start-sit data, across the entire season. And then I fill out your roster optimally. I say, based on your league, you had 48 quarterbacks that had positive warp this year. So that's 4 quarterbacks per team. And I had 84 running backs that had positive warp at some point over the season. And I had 122 receivers that had positive warp at some point. And I had 45 tight ends that had positive warp at some point. And I fill all of those out across all the rosters. And then I say, okay, based on this, I want to include this many of every single player in the corpus of every single week. And in addition to my data set, that tells me, hey, this is the number of times a player was started that week. I also have the top players who are rostered that week. So even if somebody is on bye, they'll be in the top 140 whatever wide receivers that were rostered. And if a quarterback is on the bench, but they are one of those top tier backups that we like to have, they'll be one of the top 48 quarterbacks rostered. And I will include only those players in the data set. So instead of with the quarterbacks, I would normally be including the top 28. I instead include the top 48 or so. And then this is the efficiency still affects this. So I will do 1.2 times the 48. And so I can include an additional 10-ish on top of that. I'll end up including the top 58 or so quarterbacks. And that's how you start to see that the high efficiency setting that I have, it pretty closely matches what you find rostered in a lot of your leagues. You tend to find that the numbers that match up with the high efficiency setting tend to really just fit in with, this is about what our leagues have rostered. Because most people have intuitively figured out a lot of these things, but they haven't gone through and put all the data behind it, all the math behind it. You find that our brains subconsciously know all these answers. We just don't know how to mathematically get there. And Warp just finds a way to run into the same things that we intuitively already know. So, in best ball leagues, that's how it finds those players and is able to do A-Warp based on that. So if you're in a really weird league, where let's say you would roster very few wide receivers, let's say you would only have 100 wide receivers rostered in your league for any given week. Well, go 1.2 times that, you get to 120. That's only the top four wide receivers for all the teams in the NFL. So those fifth wide receivers, those guys that truly come out of nowhere, those guys are not going to be included in the calculation for that week because they probably were not on your roster. And Warp is able to calculate that number. And that number is also what you see come back to you in my roster construction tab on the Warp calculator. The roster construction tab is the same thing as this 48 quarterbacks, this 84 running backs, this 120 wide receivers, and 45 tight ends that I just came up with off the top of my head. The only difference is I've just divided it by the total number of teams in your league to make it easy for you to see, oh, this is how many of each position I should have on my team. It spits back, you want 4 quarterbacks, and you want 8 running backs, and you want 10 wide receivers, and you want 4 tight ends. The reason I say take that with a grain of salt is because out of everything I've been covering in this entire episode, there is one constant that is assumed throughout all of this. And it is that everybody is playing perfectly optimally. Notice I've been using the basis is the top 24 quarterbacks. There's nobody that's holding a quarterback 3. If you have a quarterback 3, you're trading that to somebody else because they need your quarterback 3 to be their quarterback 2. And there's nobody that's starting in a lineup league, those random wide receiver 4s, because they don't have any players because they traded them all away for draft picks. None of that is assumed in the Warp calculation. It assumes everybody plays optimally. And that is the biggest thing to pay attention to when you're looking at Warp. It does not account for the specifics of how your league is constructed in terms of how people choose to roster their teams, who is available and unavailable for you to start in any given week. And this is where understanding the Warp results versus your league's market becomes a real difference maker. If you have a league where, okay, running back is worth more than normal, but your league decides to allow you to still have running backs at the same price as a different league, that becomes an edge for you. But if they decide to hoard all of the quarterbacks in a quarterback-heavy Warp league, you are now sitting there having to try and find value out of the other positions to make up for those quarterbacks you're missing out on. Or you can corner a market. You can say, I have all of the top options at tight end. This is the easiest one to do it at because usually you can start a bunch of tight ends in flex spots. And if you say are able to start 4 tight ends, if you've got like one of those deep starting lineup leagues, and you have the top 4 tight ends, nobody else can come close to matching that at their tight end position. But you need to make sure that you are not sacrificing the other positions. Your wide receivers, your running backs, your quarterbacks. Because if you're sacrificing those, that all of a sudden becomes a big problem. And that is something that right now, Warp does not account for. It does not account for those weird market dynamics, those weird roster situations that are going to come up in some of your leagues. In addition, those target roster construction numbers, those are literally just, in an ideal world, this is what should be rostered across the league. I use those as a little bit of a guide at the beginning, especially if I don't understand the scoring settings of a league because maybe they're crazy and we're starting 14 players. We've done all sorts of wacky, crazy scoring. I've mentioned the Koopa Talk League in quite a few times in this podcast, which is how ridiculous I made those scoring settings. That is 100% a league where I just kind of turned to Warp and said, please help me figure out how many of each position I should be rostering, because I have no idea. But as you understand a league, as you develop a strategy, you can start to stray from that. In your lineup leagues, it does a horrible job of understanding how you actually want to roster construct, because it doesn't understand the idea of, I want to have people on my bench for a percentage chance that they're going to be useful to be started in any given week. It does not understand a backup running back strategy, a backup quarterback strategy, where, yeah, I have these backup quarterbacks, but there's a 50% chance that they will be useful this coming year. It doesn't know that. It just knows that of the quarterbacks that actually got started, this is what their results were. And you can look at that and go, okay, there were 48 quarterbacks that were useful. So there were an additional 16 out of the top 32 who turned out to be useful that past year. But the Warp tool, it just goes, everybody should have four quarterbacks because that's what's optimal. What it does not tell you is that what you know with your intuition, I should roster all of the backup quarterbacks in the NFL, and all of them are going to be useful. And maybe I should even roster some of the third string quarterbacks, because some of those might jump the backup quarterbacks if the coaching staff randomly decides when they get halfway through the season, oh, our starter's hurt, let's go with the third stringer instead of the second stringer and toss them in, because they're a rookie and who knows what happens when we put a rookie in there. Those are the kinds of things Warp cannot account for. And you need to know that it has that limitation. You need to know that just looking at the roster construction tab is not going to be the ideal strategy that you want to do. Same thing goes in best ball leagues. Warp is going to say, hey, you should have four quarterbacks, because it's accounting for having those backup quarterbacks on your roster. However, if you are looking at your team, if you have four quarterbacks, it, assuming they're evenly distributed among all the teams, every single team has a quarterback who's producing a zero every single week. That's what you're going into expecting. We know in best ball, we don't want to expect a zero. We want somebody who's out on the field, has the potential to score points. We want that extra wide receiver or tight end who might just come out of nowhere and score points for us. We want to stray slightly from this Warp recommended roster construction in order to figure out what the correct roster construction for our team actually is. We need to use some of these things that we understand about our market dynamics, about our scoring settings, about how our rosters can be constructed, in order to adjust these numbers coming out of the Warp tool. Because those are things that cannot be explained by straight math. That is human interaction, human knowledge, things like that. It's the same reason why, as much as stock traders want to put automatic bots on everything and just make the stock market automatically something where all the bots, they know how to do the perfect trades. They can't. Because the bots don't have any idea when a company releases their earning report, whether that's something good or that's something bad. They just see, hey, the price is going up or price is going down. This is what I'm programmed to do. I'm either going to buy or I'm going to sell. And it's that same idea that comes into Warp. You need to understand that you have to put some human intuition on the basis of what is going on in order to use the tool to its fullest. And if you're going to take away one thing from this, you are not going to go to southharmonff.com and check out the work tool. You're not going to pay attention to anything to do with warp other than hear me talk about it, other people at South Harmon or other people on other platforms talk about it. All you are going to do is just understand that warp is a calculation to help you understand the value of a player in your fantasy league, but it is not the end-all be-all. It does not give you all the answers you've ever wanted to know. It does not give you everything that you need for a one-stop shop. But it is extremely powerful for telling you how valuable a player is, and more specifically, how a position compares to another position, and how that should help you roster construct in your leagues. How are you going to choose which players are the strongest in your scoring settings and in your league format? Which ones are the weakest? Where there are potentially pockets of value that your leagues may or may not understand, where the difference between one player and another is minimal, whereas the difference between two players that you would think is pretty minimal is, in fact, a lot larger than you might expect. That is the power of warp, and that is the kind of thing that you need to sit down, look at the tool, experience it, take a look at it, and just play around with a lot of different league settings. The only reason I know so much as I do, where I went on America's Game in January and said, I oftentimes don't look at the scoring settings in a league, and I just look at the warp tool, and I can pretty easily guess what the scoring settings are just from looking at it. The reason I'm able to do that is just because I've looked at the warp tool with so many league types where I knew what their scoring settings were. And just by process of doing it over and over and over again, practicing over and over and over, where I knew what my biases were in these leagues, I already had an idea of what was going on in them. And then I decided to try and stretch my boundaries and look at what is this graph actually saying compared to a graph that I play a lot more with. What is the difference between them? What players are higher and lower? What positions are higher and lower compared to each other? That's the kind of thing that can only be gained through experience. And that's the one thing that you should be using the tool for. Do not try to use it to predict. Do not try to use it to justify that, hey, Baker Mayfield was the number three best quarterback in warp last year, so he should be number three this next year. That's not how this works. You need to use all your other things you know about the NFL in order to say that Baker Mayfield is going to repeat his performance from last year, and if he repeats his fantasy performance from last year, he should produce a similar warp this coming year. But that's the only thing that you should take away from trying to predict with warp. Warp is not going to tell you any player is going to repeat. Warp is not going to tell you anything about why a player did as well as they did. And so if you've listened this far into this episode, you have now heard this message, and you should not go out there peddling warp where it does not belong. It should be there for you to help understand your leagues, and that's it. And as a reward for listening this long into what is probably the longest Grinding the Edge episode I have ever made, if you don't have the warp tool yet, I'm going to give you a free code to check it out for 1 month. If you go to warp.life, that is warp.life, it will take you to the warp page. And if you sign up for 1 month and use the code GRINDINGTHEEDGEEP49 with all capitals, you will get 1 month for free of the warp tool. Go and check it out. Go and play around with it. It syncs automatically to your sleeper leagues and your MFL leagues, goes through, performs the calculations, and I want you to go through and experience it. Just check out, okay, what do these charts look like? Go to your standard basic league that I'm sure you have. Go to one of your leagues that is a little off from standard. take a look at the differences between those graphs, take a look at the differences between the charts and things like that, and just start to get some experience with looking at what might it look like if I were to try and analyze some things with this. I am only going to keep this offer up for 1 week. There will never be a better offer than this. So if you want to try out the Warp Tool and literally not have to pay a dime, now is your opportunity. And if you are sitting here and you are still confused, you're like, I have no idea what is going on, feel free to reach out to me. I respond to DMs or direct mentions in tweets and things like that. So please, I'm at Dynasty Koopa on X, and I'm Koopa Troopa 8 literally everywhere else. I've got accounts on Blue Sky, I've got accounts on Instagram, I've got my accounts on Discord. If you find a Koopa Troopa 8 somewhere, there is an extremely high probability that it is me. So please don't hesitate to reach out. And once again, if you are trying to sign up and get that discount, it is Grinding the Edge EP49. All caps, no spaces. That's everything that I have for this week. I hope you've enjoyed this marathon of an episode. And as always, stay sharp and keep grinding that edge. I'll see you next week.